Hi, I'm Tim Barron, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast, where we share deep insights and fresh perspectives on the latest legal marketing trends and strategies. The podcast is a production of Get2B Social. Today, our founder Guy Alvarez chats with John Simpson, CEO of One North. One North is a digital agency that partners exclusively with professional services organizations to create interactive programs that enhance the client experience, drive new business, and attract top talent. And One North is well known throughout the legal industry. John offers lots of great insights in this conversation, such as how to create client loyalty, how understanding the customer involves deep research to gather data, which can then inform your marketing and business development process. And spoiler alert, top responses for the buying process were experience and value. Price wasn't even in the top three. And a common theme throughout the conversation is a focus on the customer experience. Here is Guy's terrific conversation with John Simpson.
Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I'm your host, Guy Alvarez. And today it is my pleasure to have John Simpson. John is one of the founder and chief executive officers at One North. One North is one of the leading websites and digital marketing firms in the legal industry. John, before we get started, first of all, John, welcome to the show.
Hi, Guy. I'm glad to be here.
So before we get started, tell us a little bit about how you get into this business. How did you get to be in the legal industry and a little bit of your background?
Sure, I'm happy to do that, Guy. Well, I've been in the working world for about 20 years in terms of my professional career. And interestingly enough, I've been in professional services, either working for a professional services organization or servicing professional services organizations that entire time. I started my career as a consultant back in the mid-90s at Anderson Consulting, which, of course, is now Accenture. And after about 4 years at Accenture, I think all of us probably remember around the 2000 time period, there was the dot-com boom. So a lot of consultants were joining startups to get some different experience. And my plan was to leave the consulting world, join a startup in early 2000, do that for a couple of years, and then eventually head on to full-time business school. Well, fast forward about 18 years, and I'm still at that startup that I joined back in the spring of 2000. And spring of 2000, I joined a little company called Hubbard One, and I was the 35th employee. Again, figured I'd be there for about a year. Hubbard One was an independent company that worked largely with a law firm client base, doing website design and development and hosting for law firms. And I really, really liked the space. I liked the company. I liked the people. I liked the close-knit atmosphere that I was able to see at things like the Legal Marketing Association conference. My first one was in Toronto back in 2001. So I stuck with it. And over the course of the last 17, 18 years, we've continued to work within the legal client base and then expanded in other professional services as well.
Obviously, One North is really, really well known in the legal industry, and you guys are really branching on into other very interesting sectors, obviously professional services. So One North regularly conducts research on the buyers of professional services. Tell us a little bit about that research and maybe some of the insights that you have been able to glean from that research.
So One North does conduct a lot of our own primary research on behalf of our clients. And I'll really go back to the why before I describe some of the insights around the research. One of my favorite experiences in going to business school was having a marketing professor tell us that the most important thing for a marketer to do was to understand the customer. Because if you understand the customer, everything that flows from that, whether it be advertising or creative or content, whatever it might be, is going to be on target. But it all starts with a deep understanding of who the customer is. What we found in working with professional service organizations is oftentimes they struggle, frankly, to really inject the voice of customer into their brand and their website and their design activities. And that's for a lot of reasons. Sometimes they just don't want to approach their customers and don't feel like it's appropriate. Other times their customers tend to be anonymous or don't want to be highlighted by the firm. And so it makes that research a little more difficult. And at One North, we feel that that research, however, is critically important. So what we've done is over the last several years, we've started to build out on an annual basis our own research, where we go out and we survey buyers of high-end professional services. So these are buyers of legal, accounting, investment banking, consulting, architecture, engineering, construction types of services. And we talk to them about particular subjects pertaining to how they select their outside providers, how they work with them, what they like, and what they don't like, et cetera. So for example, in 2016, we rolled out our results, reputation, and relationships, what professional services buyers are really looking for, research, which was really aimed at that buying process. So when somebody is in the process of buying high-end professional services, what are the key things they're looking for? And then just last year, we rolled out a slightly different research report, and that was really focused on courting the commitment-phobic client. And it was targeted specifically at how do you create client loyalty once you actually have the client, right? So we're really approaching clients and prospective clients to understand what it is that the professional services do or can do, put themselves in a better position to win the work and then to provide great service.
That sounds so interesting. And I feel like it is something that is so needed, right? Is to get a better sense of what it is that clients really want from professional services organizations. And then, you know, I feel like a lot of times, a lot of lawyers and other professional services professionals, they really look at it as a transactional type of thing where, you know, they get the work, they do the work, and then they move on. And so, you know, tell us a little bit about what you learned from both of those research pieces. They sound really, really interesting.
Yeah, there are so many things that we learned that are interesting, but, you know, I'll sum up some of my favorite insights. So, you know, here's really interesting. In terms of the top three reasons that a PSO, a professional service organization, will make it into the initial consideration set of a buyer, those three top reasons are, in this order, experience, which is way off the charts, probably not terribly surprising. Value was second, not price, but value. And then even further down was actually relationships, a personal relationship. And price wasn't even in the top three. And I think what that tells us is that personal relationship is important, but what's most important is that you have the experience and that they can prove that you have the experience and that you're providing value. And if you don't provide those two things, a personal relationship really doesn't matter. And I think that's something that's really shifted over the last 40 or 50 years when I look at professional services and the buying process there. Is it used to be oftentimes relationships or business relationships started with a personal relationship, you know, maybe at the club or whatever, and then eventually work their way into business relationships. Whereas today, that business relationship has to start with value, with experience. And then if a personal relationship comes from it, great. But that's not critical to actually making a sale or keeping a client.
So let me ask you a question. When you tell your clients this information, when you tell them, you know, these are the things that your clients are looking for, how reluctant are they or willing are they to accept it? Or do you get pushback from some of your clients?
I think that when we present this research, we get a lot of nodding heads because it makes sense to what they're seeing empirically and on a day-to-day basis. I think one of the biggest challenges in the professional services space, but in particular the legal space, is that they oftentimes feel like the folks that are providing the professional services, the partners and the attorneys and so forth, don't often have the bandwidth to execute across the full life cycle of client development. And that really boils down to the fact that they're still billing by the hour. And so an hour spent billing is an hour that you're not going to get back. And frankly, is an hour that you'd rather be billing rather than going out and doing all of these customer service oriented things. And until that model changes, interestingly enough, I don't think organizations like law firms can take full advantage and get the most out of their partners and associates and attorneys in the client development process.
You talked a little bit about the client experience, and that's not necessarily something that most professionals think about, especially in the legal industry. You know, is from your perspective, is this a thing that can actually move the needle?
Yeah, client experience is such an interesting thing, Guy. If you think about your experience, for example, of going into an Apple store and how locked on they are, where somebody comes and greets you as soon as you walk in and types in what you're looking for on an iPad and immediately gets you the service you need. And then if you need support, you know exactly where to go up to the Genius Bar, where they've got all these smart people that can digest and diagnose your problem extremely quickly. As consumers, we are very attuned to what a great client experience looks like and what a poor client experience looks like. And we're going to take those same expectations to our service providers. Now, how do our service providers react? That's going to say a lot about them. In the legal space today, and I heard this at LMA numerous times, let's face it, it's a zero-sum game. Right? The legal business is not growing exponentially or growing at all. And so that means that law firms are going to be taking business from other law firms. Well, there's a lot of really good lawyers out there with a lot of really great experience. So something like client experience is something that can absolutely affect the client development process at the margin, right? If one firm is offering a better client experience than another, you're going to go with them. And we're seeing some really interesting innovations here in helping clients really transform their client experience or certain parts of their client experience using technology. So for example, we have one client, global client, who is now providing value outside of the billable hour to their best customers via an online portal that allows the client to go in for a routine task and be able to basically go through a checklist to spit out information about how intellectual property is treated in various parts of the globe or how stock options are treated depending on what country you're in. And firms that are starting to offer these types of things, I think are going to have a leg up on those firms that are still using, say, the billable hour to service their clients. You know, that is definitely something. If you're using a tool like the one I'm talking about, if you're a client of that, you're going to appreciate the organization's commitment to creating other areas of value for you to be a better client experience.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. You know, it's kind of interesting, and it's happening less and less, but there's been many times when I've gone into, you know, an Am Law 100 law firm, and, you know, I go there for a meeting, and I walk into this gorgeous lobby with, like, beautiful views and mahogany wood furniture, and, you know, the service is just impeccable. But then, you know, I go back to the office and I look them up on the web, and their website is just like, really? So, you know, I think, you know, from a client experience, as you mentioned, it's important to provide a continuous experience in whatever method or whatever channel the client is interfacing with the firm, right? So I know that's something that you guys have been working on, is helping law firms provide the same type of experience in a digital domain as it is in the in-person domain.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. We have a methodology we call the relationship cycle here at One North. And essentially, it acknowledges the fact that professional services organizations, there's always going to be an analog experience when you're working with a professional service organization. You're always going to meet that attorney over lunch or see them speak at an event. When you work with them, certainly it's going to be either face-to-face or over the phone. There's always a very human element. You're going to be walking into their law firm offices, as you just described. That's the analog component. But there's this whole digital side that can support that analog relationship. And it's up to the firm and organizations like ours to find out where are those creative ways where digital can make a difference. And I'll give you a great example. We have an Am Law 100 client who recognized that even if they provided fantastic legal work for a client, the client was thrilled with the outcome of the legal work, what oftentimes degraded the client experience was the billing practices. You know, on complex matters, the client would get all sorts of bills. They'd have to call the firm. They'd be working with a low-level analyst at the firm to get the information they needed. They then had to parse these bills, get them in the format they wanted to. Well, it's all a really, really bad experience after a really good experience. And as we know, clients only remember the last worst experience with you, right? So in this case, we worked with the firm's CFO to actually build a self-service portal where a client can go in, find it through a very easy user experience, get the information they need at any time, 24/7, without ever needing support from the firm directly. And it's been a huge success. So it's those types of things that organizations need to be thinking about.
So we talked about, you know, digital as a way to enhance the client experience, but I would imagine then that digital can also be used by professional service firms to attract talent. What are your thoughts about that?
So let's face it, when you're a professional service organization, talent is your supply chain. And in any business, a supply chain is absolutely critical. If you have a hiccup in your supply chain, if you have a quality problem in your supply chain, then your end product, the product that you give to your customers, whether it's a car or professional services, is not going to be delivered in the way that you want. So firms today, and this is particularly in light of a very tight labor market, are getting really smart about how they're marketing to talent. In fact, many firms today are thinking about not only the corporate brand, but developing a talent brand, which is really a flip of their corporate brand that's just focused on those folks that they specifically want to recruit into the organization. And when they focus on their talent brand, they're able to be very specific about who they want, the type of value proposition they have for those job seekers, and then how they attract, grow, and retain that talent once it's actually in the firm. So organizations today, particularly professional services, are spending a lot of time thinking through what does brand mean in a talent context. And the ones that are doing it are having huge success. I actually read recently, Guy, that 61% of CEOs, this is across all businesses, not just professional services, but 61% of CEOs don't think that they're recruiting fast enough or well enough. And I think that's a reflection of the fact that we've got a really tight labor market. There are more options than ever for employment, for self-employment, for entrepreneurship. For that reason, firms have to be really smart about using digital in order to attract and really bring those job seekers into the firm.
And especially if you consider that we're getting to the age where millennials and the next generation are all, you know, digital natives. They grew up with digital. So I would imagine that if it's important now, it's only going to become more important as we move forward.
There's no question about it. And, you know, I was recently doing some research on this topic, and it brought about some of the major shifts in the labor market that have occurred since I started my career. As I told you, I started my career back in the mid-90s working for a big consulting company. And in the mid-90s, coming out of college, my options were fairly limited in terms of starting my career. It was, you know, go to a big consulting organization, go to an investment bank, you know, join these sort of training programs, if you will. Whereas if you think about millennials and the options that they've had since they've been in the workforce, self-employment is skyrocketing because it's so much easier to hang your shingle digitally and, you know, provide services to anybody. It's easier to market yourself. It's easier to be an entrepreneur because there are more avenues for financing, et cetera. And it's easier to be a passive job candidate, right? In our day, when we were coming out of college, we had to actively go seek jobs. We had to put together a resume, mail it out, make a phone call to make sure it got where it needed to be. It was all on us. Whereas today, you can put up your LinkedIn profile, you can set up your blog, you can create a mini site that contains your portfolio, and you can be a passive candidate that's going to receive all sorts of interest out there. And so the labor market has fundamentally shifted, and whether it's a law firm, a PSO, or any business, you're now competing with entrepreneurship, self-employment, yeah, et cetera, for this talent.
Yeah, and Upwork and Fiverr and, you know, the whole freelance generation. So I completely agree. So we talked a little bit about, you know, obviously you're a major force. One North is a major force in the legal industry. But as you mentioned, you're also now working with other professional service organizations. What do you see the major differences when it comes to working with law firms versus other professional services firms? And how is their approach to digital different? Do you feel like that the legal industry is in line with the other professions, or is it about the same, or is there a disadvantage? What are your thoughts around that?
Law firms and other PSOs, in terms of the way that they market themselves digitally, are the same but different. One North had traditionally grown up in the legal space, and for many years only worked with law firms. But over the last 6 years or so, we've expanded beyond that to the point where we work with accountancies, as I mentioned, consultants, investment banks, architecture, engineering, construction, all sorts of other professional services verticals. So, you know, it's probably easiest to start with the similarities. Those are relationship-based businesses as well. And that means that if you have the experience, you're going to get hired because you have developed a value-based relationship with a client, and that human touch is extremely important, right? If I'm looking for someone to handle a major matter for me, or if I'm looking for an investment banker to take me public, if I'm looking for somebody to help me architect our company headquarters, I'm going to get to know that person and develop a relationship and ensure that they have the experience and that I like working with them before I actually hire them. So the similarities are that they absolutely are relationship businesses as well. But I'd say the differences come in when you start to look at how they frame their thinking about brand and their brand overall. Because here, what we see is that professional service organizations, non-law firms, they tend to focus on things like their experience, their clients, their methodologies. They focus less on individuals. And I've always thought it was interesting and perhaps illuminating that law firms still have biographies on their website. Whereas if you go to large consulting organizations, they lead with the process and the methodology. Exactly. And it'll, you know, not to say one is better than the other, but here's another area, Guy, where I think technology is going to have an impact. With law firms starting to use things like artificial intelligence and getting smarter, as I mentioned earlier about a global client of mine who's servicing their clients in new and interesting ways and providing value outside the billable hour. As those things start to be competitive advantages for some law firms versus others, I think you are going to see that, you know, maybe the shift is going to move away from advertising individuals and more advertising the intellectual property, the technology, the means with which law firms are servicing their clients. So, you know, I predict over the next 10 years, we'll see a shift in the way the law firms market themselves.
That is so interesting that you mentioned that, because I was just talking to a client and they're talking about, you know, we need to have all of our attorneys on the home page. And I said, why? You know, like, is this about each of your attorneys or is this about the firm? But yeah, it is something. And then you look at, you know, you look at EY, you look at PwC, you look at Accenture, and there is not one single thing about the individuals on the home page, which I guess is a huge difference. You know, one of the other things that I've encountered, a big difference between law firms and other professional services firms, has been that law firms still don't really behave, or most of them, I have to say some of them do now, but still most of them don't really behave or think of themselves as businesses. They really think still as, you know, the noble profession and partnerships, and they don't really operate in a way that most businesses do, whereas I think, you know, consulting firms, accounting firms, they really do think about themselves as businesses, and they look at the different things where they're looking to invest and their lead generation and all of those things. Do you find that as well in your work?
We do often see that sort of non-law firm professional service organizations, they tend to make decisions a little bit differently than the law firms make decisions. So, you know, oftentimes at the large law firms today, you'll find that, for example, a marketing decision about a website or a brand includes a wide variety of stakeholders that might make up the marketing committee at the firm. What we see when we work with non-law firms is oftentimes they have an executive, a marketing executive that is purely responsible for that brand. They might seek input and otherwise, but they are really empowered to make that final decision. And I think it's just the nature of where the legal industry has come from that oftentimes they tend to be more consensus-driven organizations and more democratic in their process, which, you know, I think that served One North really well in terms of our ability to understand that process and be able to work with firms through pretty complex challenges. But it is very different than non-law firms. There's no doubt about it.
So what do you think the future holds for professional services firms and their use of digital for client development? Where do you think we're going?
I think there's a tremendous opportunity for law firms and really all professional services organizations to really start capturing, mining, and using data to better inform the business development process. And what I mean by that is today, I think the business development process that many of the firms we work with go through is one that's largely undocumented. It's a partner making a phone call here or taking somebody to lunch there, but oftentimes they don't have the data to say that that lunch occurred, that that phone call occurred. And in the future, I think through the combination of, again, artificial intelligence and the rise of data analytics, there's this vast amount of information that could be captured and then mined to figure out what are the best steps to develop a client, and how as business development professionals within a law firm can we use that data and that knowledge gleaned from all of that data to better inform our partners on how to go about their marketing and business development efforts. So I think over the next probably not 5 years, but 5 to 10 years, you're going to see data really work its way into the client development process. And that's only positive for the law firm business.
Data is power. That is for sure. All right. Well, we unfortunately are running out of time. So our audience, John, is primarily legal marketing professionals and attorneys who are trying to enhance their marketing at their firms. What would be one word of advice you would leave us with? What would you tell them they should be focusing on when it comes to online and digital marketing?
You actually use the word in the question, Guy, and that is they should focus, have a focus. And what I mean by that is that most organizations that we work with, they oftentimes, because they're democratic in their decision-making, they oftentimes aren't specific enough about who their target market is. And as a result, they oftentimes find themselves with watered-down messaging or watered-down approaches. And it's one of the hardest things to do in business is to actually focus and decide on what you're going to do and what you're not going to do or what you're going to be okay being bad at. But it is so critically important, particularly for law firms and professional services, because there are limited resources. So being very specific about who your customers are, what they need from you, and what are the messages they're going to resonate, and then targeting your digital marketing at those particular personas is truly critical.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's been a really great episode. If anyone in our audience wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way for them to contact you or to follow you online?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, you can go to the redesignedonenorth.com. That's onenorth.com. Please peruse our new website that we're very proud of. But outside of that, you can definitely shoot me an email at jsimpson@onenorth.com, and we'd love to talk to you.
Excellent. All right, John, thank you so much for being on the show, and until next time.
If you like this episode, please subscribe to our podcast. And we'd love it if you also left a review for us on Apple Podcasts. We're also on Stitcher and SoundCloud and Google Play and wherever you listen to podcasts. Before you go, I want to ask you a question. Do you struggle with digital marketing and how to make it work for you and for your firm? If so, please go to lawfirmmarketinghelp.com and sign up for a free digital audit. The audit will provide you with all of the information you need to build a blueprint for your digital marketing strategy to produce the results you want. You'll find the show notes for this episode, along with all of the Legal Marketing 2.0 episodes, at goodtobesocial.com. Thanks for listening. Until next time.